Now, Florida lawmakers passed new gun control legislation following the mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Lawmakers raised the minimum age to buy rifles from 18 to 21. They also included a ban on bump stocks and instituted a 3-day waiting period for gun purchases. Since then, the National Rifle Association has filed a lawsuit challenging the changes to the law. The organization claims that the new laws are in violation of the Constitution. Our next guest is here to talk about the politics surrounding the lawsuit, the influence of the NRA, and its political future in a country where the conversation surrounding gun control in some ways appears to be changing. Alexandra Falindra is an associate professor of political science at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Alexandra, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome, Rob. Nice to be with you.
Can you talk about the significance of the state of Florida passing these new gun laws, despite the opposition of the NRA?
It clearly suggests that there might be a turning point, that at least after Parkland, there is increased mobilization among young people in the state of Florida, and that has contributed to the pressure that the largely Republican legislators in Florida and its Republican and conservative governor felt to pass certain consensus, I would say, pieces of restrictions on guns. These are not anything that is very radical. It's a very compromised legislation that includes some fairly minor provisions, given the size of overall gun ownership in the United States and how easy it is to get guns.
Florida Governor Republican Rick Scott has been a supporter of the Second Amendment and gun rights, but he did sign the gun reform package. Here's a little bit about what he said about it.
There's been vigorous debate on all of these issues. I believe every side has had their chance to share their views, and that is truly what makes our democracy great. At the beginning of this process, I said that we should give all have to give a little and make compromises, and that includes me. I know that many wanted more gun control than what is included in this bill, and I know that many believe this bill has too much gun control. I respect the sincerity and the validity of both of these viewpoints.
What do you make of how the Republican governor of Florida described these new laws?
Yeah, I mean, he said it is a compromise between what supporters of stricter gun regulations have been asking for and what the NRA and its members are willing to give in. For example, the bump stocks was probably the easiest part in terms of this legislation, given that even the NRA at some point said that it is okay to regulate bump stocks and not allow people to essentially convert military assault rifles into almost automatic weapons.
I want to look at an NRA statement. The NRA is suing Florida, especially over that increase in the age of buying long guns, 18 to 21. Here's a quote from their statement about their lawsuit. Every legislator who voted for this bill violated their sworn oath to support, protect, and defend the Constitution. Then in that statement, they go on to say, hey, maybe we need to vote out people who supported this legislation. Can you talk about the NRA's reaction in the courts and in the political system?
It's definitely far more, it's going to be far more effective in the political, at the political level, and especially as the 2018 elections are approaching, rather than the courts. There have already been several decisions at the federal appeals level that have decided that age restrictions are appropriate under the Second Amendment, and that putting this type of gun control restriction does not constitute a violation of the right to bear arms. And all, even in the decision, the Heller decision of 2008, which basically determined if you will, that there is such a thing as an individual right to bear arms. Justice Scalia did carefully specify that that doesn't mean that there isn't a place for reasonable restrictions that the states and localities can place. Now the debate is going to be on what constitutes reasonable restrictions. We have already seen Maryland introducing and passing legislation to ban assault weapons. So we will see in the next few years as these challenges by the NRA percolate through the system, what holds. Clearly, the hope of the NRA, as it was in the case in the past, is to get this to the Supreme Court and have a Supreme Court decision. However, already the Supreme Court has declined to hear cases related to age restrictions, even though over the objections of Clarence Thomas, for example. As far as we can say, these types of restrictions will hold as constitutional.
Talking to Alexandra Falindra from the University of Illinois, Chicago, looking at gun control after the Parkland shooting. And Alexandra, you've said elsewhere that there's kind of an imbalance on the gun debate. While a lot of people, when surveyed, might say they support particular kinds of gun control or expanded background checks, the people who are opposed to those things and the NRA are more fervent, they're more passionate about the issue, and they work better as a political lobbying group. Do you see that starting to change with the student protests?
I would like to say that, but I don't think that there's going to be a radical change. We have seen instances of mobilization for short periods of time after major shootings. It happened after Newtown in 2012. It has happened before. After essentially every major and sensational shooting, and they're getting worse and worse, the public's response to guns spikes. People want more guns, more gun control. And as a result, there is an instance of mobilization, but then the media move on from the issue and the people move on from the issue. To mobilize people around an issue, it really needs to speak to them on a very deep identity level. It has to mean something to them personally as members of groups. And so far, gun control has been, for people, an issue of costs and benefits. These costs and benefits are counted in actual lives, but unlike gun rights, which people understand viscerally as something that is important to them as a group and as people, gun control has not reached that level yet. I don't expect that it will be anytime very soon, especially because the messaging around gun control is really not conducive to making it an issue that would activate people's identities and who they are.
Alexandra Falindra is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Illinois, Chicago. She's with us to talk about gun laws passed in Florida and a National Rifle Association lawsuit against those laws, all following the Parkland school shooting. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of some of the legislation itself, including raising the minimum age to buy long guns, raising that from 18 to 21, as is the federal limit for handguns right now? What do you think of the NRA's decision to challenge Florida in the courts over this legislation and possibly challenge lawmakers in elections? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the NRA's decision to sue Florida over new gun control legislation that lawmakers passed last week. We're talking to Alexandra Felindra, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Illinois, Chicago. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the gun control legislation in Florida, of the NRA lawsuit? Do you see the conversation over gun control changing? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go to your calls now. Jim is with us in Rhinelander. Jim, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think?
So I think the NRA is completely unreasonable, and I've thought this for a long time. I used to be a member, and they changed like in the late 70s or early 80s. So I said, they're not reasonable anymore. And I think that's what the NRA stands for, not reasonable anymore. And the other thing I want to say is I think we have this wrong with these assault-style-looking guns. They are no different than the guns we carry in the deer woods as far as you have a semi-automatic deer rifle that can shoot. I'm sorry, I just came in from the car. That can shoot off rounds just as quickly. What we need to get at is the capacity of how many bullets these guns can hold. I own rifles, I own shotguns. When I hunt ducks, by federal law, I can only have 3 shot shells in my shotgun, and that's to help protect the ducks so there isn't overshooting. And I've been saying since the first shooting started, we need to start addressing that sort of thing.
Jim, I'm going to jump in. You can catch your breath, too. Alexandra, he's saying, raising an issue people have been raising about the ammunition capacity of weapons. Is there any movement, state or federal, to put limits on that?
Not one that seems to be going very far. The best thing that has happened is with these bomb stocks, which are basically ways to really convert the rifles into almost automatic style shooting, so you can have really rapid fire because you use these conversion things. But in terms of actually regulating ammunition more closely and not allowing the magazines that take 15 and 20 bullets at a time. So far, none of these state laws, and it's Florida was the first one, but there is action, as you might know, in Illinois. Our governor here just voted vetoed today a very, very similar legislation, and our state legislature is going to try to override the veto in the next few days. But these bills are not including bans on high-capacity ammunition or anything like that, and it doesn't seem to be part of this type of compromise at this stage.
Jim, thanks for the call. Go next to TJ in Clinton. TJ, hi.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good. What do you think?
Well, a couple things. First off, I do agree with the NRA filing a lawsuit. Although we may not agree with the opinion of the NRA, it's nice to know that there's an organization that's always going to at least attempt to try and support the Second Amendment. But my question really revolves around punishment. We hear about these shootings all the time, and we hear that we need more gun control and we need to, you know, restrict the number of bullets or whatever it may be, but have we talked much about what kind of punishment is there for the carelessness of others, mainly parents, allowing children access to these weapons to be able to commit these kinds of crimes?
TJ, thanks for the call. In this case, the Parkland perpetrator apparently was able to buy a gun legally at 18 on his own. But Alexandra, talk about parental responsibility. Is that part of the conversation here?
To the extent that it is possible to, yes, I mean, some people are talking about the role of parents, but it is so easy, even for underage children. We saw that at Columbine.
the two shooters at Columbine were underage, but they were able to send a friend of theirs who was of age to a gun show. And given the very, very loose regulations that govern how gun sales are done at gun shows, the kids were able to get high-powered weapons in through that process. It is very, very difficult, and it's not fair to put the onus on parents at this stage. A lot of these shooters have been adults. It's not typical that a 15-year-old or a 10-year-old is going to go around with a high-powered rifle and start shooting in a school, though we're starting to see younger kids implicated. More often, younger kids are actually involved in accidents, and we have thousands of even toddlers every year who die or shoot somebody by mistake because of the parents have left weapons unprotected and not secured.
And that's all the time we have. TJ, thanks for calling in. And Alexandra, thank you so much for joining us today.
Anytime.
We've been talking to Alexandra Philindra. She's an associate professor of political science at the University of Illinois, Chicago. She joined us to talk about the NRA's decision to sue Florida over gun control legislation passed there last week.